Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
How many years have I gotten to share my wines and visit with you, but always in much larger venues?
Yeah, I felt like
you here at the winery and just sit and have a conversation.
No, it's a treat, and I hope that you meant it when you invited me back, because you're not stuck with it. I'm gonna come back.
No, of course. Anytime you're in the area, and I apologize that the Chardonnays are probably a little warmer than I would normally.
It'd be good for the aromatics.
So yeah, good for the aromatics. Maybe the a little warm on the palate. So a very fun opportunity here. The TBH vineyard is one of our newest, youngest vineyards. We planted it in 2009. So what I've done is a mini vertical of three vintages of Chardonnay, three vintages of Pinot Noir, all from the TBH vineyard. And I thought it would be fun to not only see the voice of the vineyard coming through in the wines, but then to see the differences of the vintages, which there are fairly dramatic differences between 14, 15, and 16. So 2014 TBH Vineyard Chardonnay. The TBH is an acronym for the Barlow Homestead. So rather than putting a very long name, the Barlow Homestead, on the label, which the same family that built our home and the winery building that we're standing in also built the Barlow Center down in Sebastopol. So they were a very prominent agricultural family in Sebastopol. So we like telling the story of the Barlow Homestead, where we're standing now. But also realize that people remember UPS, that they'll remember the TBH vineyard when they taste the wines. They're quite memorable. 2014, a Goldilocks vintage, one of those years that the fruit was in balance with the vines. We had plenty of rainfall in that vintage. The acidity was bright. The wines are very expressive and high-toned, I call it, where they kind of have this very delicate approach to the palate, but they're very intense at the same
time.
Energy
is mind-boggling.
The energy. There's really good salinity and minerality on the finish to the Chardonnay. We tend to use very little new oak. I think there's actually more new oak on our Sonoma Coast level wines because I declassify new oak barrels from the single vineyard bottling, because I don't like a lot of new oak. I don't want to notice the oak in the wine. I want it to be integrated, and I want it to support the wine but not be noticeable. So,
my goodness, congratulations. This is such an achievement. While we were talking, I had an opportunity to preview 2016, and I was immensely impressed. But now that I'm tasting 14, again, hugely different, but so darn delicious. And the acidity, it's not piercing, but it's just so clear and present.
Right.
And exquisite. And this is the vineyard talking. I'm having a conversation right now.
Yeah, so we're in the southern part of the Green Valley, where this vineyard is. We're on top of a little ridgeline that gets a tremendous amount of coastal influence. You can actually see the grasses swaying outside the tasting room as we're talking. This is the, as it's warmed up this afternoon, it's kind of the wind getting pulled in off of the ocean. That is a daily occurrence in the afternoon. The hottest part of the day is generally 10:30 to 11:30, and the wind starts picking up around 12:30, 1 o'clock. We're on a ridgeline, but it's a very low elevation ridgeline. So we have a larger diurnal temperature swing. That's a big term. It means that the daytime temperature and the nighttime temperature are farther apart than a lot of areas around here. So we'll have cooler nights and warmer days. And I see that preserving the natural acidity. I learned through my research that when it drops below 60 degrees Fahrenheit, grapevines, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir grapevines, stop respiring their natural acidity.
They shut down. Okay.
So it gets below 60 degrees Fahrenheit very often at this vineyard, preserving that acidity that you're referring to. So it's very bright in acidity, but it has very nice ripe fruit flavors. You've got great stone fruit, like white nectarine
and the melon,
and a hints of melon, and
so
citrus, kind of on the back end. You get these great
Meyer
Renan floral notes, white citrus blossom,
and you
know, really fun stuff. It's a really complex wine, and it's fun to see the texture and the creaminess developing
as it's
aging. We're in 2019 drinking a 14. A lot of people say California Chardonnay cannot age. Well, I tasted a 1985 Joseph Swan Chardonnay in 1994, I believe it was. And I was fascinated that wine was really a beautiful, beautiful wine. 9-year-old. We quite frankly thought we're going to give this to Chef if he's lucky to cook with it, and it was stunning. So that was kind of my first. Then after that, I had old, like, 60s Mount Eden and Stony Hill, and, you know, you're like, wow, California Chardonnay can really age well if it has the acidity. The acidity is kind of the framework and the backbone to great white wine, and
I'm really excited
about this site.
I've been complaining for many years that we don't age white wines. You know, we're just culturally not predisposed to that. White Burgundy, sure, but Chardonnay is, I second everything that you've mentioned. In my experience, that's exactly the case. And I just want to make one last remark, or highlight the remark that you made, rather, which is a textural element, and that creamy mouthfeel. Mm. It's like a kitten just trotted across my palate. Yeah. It was just mesmerizing. And we talked about the salinity and minerality, which of course sound, you know, assertive, but no, it really is that supple mouthfeel that develops. And you just want to go back. You notice I finished the glass. And I'm not apologizing, because it is so pleasing.
And Chardonnay that can go with oysters. I mean, the salinity in this, I can very assuredly attest to the fact that this goes well with oysters, because I do it all the time.
This is very special. And I know 14 for most folks was a pretty short vintage, so there's not a lot of it.
Right.
Thank you.
We made about 347 cases of that.
That's not enough.
I just poured for you the 2015 TBH Vineyard Chardonnay. 15 was a very unique vintage, and I see it in the wines. So this was kind of the most stressed year during the drought in this area. We got the least amount of rainfall. It was probably the third year in the drought where we were really seeing much smaller leaves, much less growth, much reduced crop loads, the berry size was much smaller, so just less vigor overall. The soils were not as alive, because the water during the winter helps the microorganisms break down the grass and the leaves and the compost that we add to provide food to the plant, and the microorganisms aren't as active when you have less water. So you're starting to see the stress. So there's an intensity to this wine, less fruit, less kind of aromatic, pretty fruit, really a lot of intensity, but more savory notes, more kind of lemongrass notes, and these very kind of savory side to a Chardonnay. So a really interesting vintage, very unique from the vineyard, but you can see it having the commonality of the 14, but it's got this very different side to it for me.
It's almost like an older sibling.
Yes.
You know, like more grown up, more like serious.
Yeah.
And the finish, it's a ridiculous finish. As I've swallowed, as you can attest, a little while ago, and I don't know, a minute, two, I mean, when do we stop counting? There's a longevity, the stamina to this wine, that's uncanny.
Yeah, that is a very fun. That needs about 5 years, though, I think.
I was going to say, no, this
I mean,
is
it would benefit from 5 years.
It's,
yeah, so.
I can't imagine how exciting it would be to try this wine as it develops. I don't know if I'd have the patience for 5 years, but.
Well, so I am doing something for everyone out there. I am saving a palette of these wines. This was the inaugural release, the 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I have saved a palette of each of these wines so that I plan on waiting until they're 10 years old and then doing a library release, basically, of these wines, because I don't expect my consumers to have to age their wines. And some people are going to want to have that experience of me aging it for them and then offering, you know, a few bottles to people. So it'll be fun to offer that and let people see what great California Chardonnay can be that is aged 10 or 15 years. So
can I just say for a moment how generous that is? You said a palate. You're a small business. For you to put away wine for that period of time is not economically sound. I mean, I'm sure your accountant is probably at some point let you know that that's the case. But it's so incredibly generous of you to offer people an opportunity to have perfectly solid wine so that some of us that are very curious and have to open the bottles right away, we have an opportunity to really see how it blossoms in the cellar.
It'll be fun. I think it'll be really a neat opportunity for people to experience something that, you know, let's face it, if you live in New York and you have a wine refrigerator like this, you're not going to save a bottle for 10 years. You're rotating it through. You don't have that opportunity. So for me, it's fun to, you know, share with people what wine can be. And, you know, there's a difference between young, fresh, vibrant wines and how it softens and how it develops and the nuances, the complexities that develop as it ages. So it'll be fun to share with folks.
I suggest everyone takes advantage of the generosity, because if somebody offered me to sell our wine for me, again, in perfect conditions, and maybe even in a vertical format, giving an opportunity to dip my palate in it, that's like the best offer ever.
Yeah.
This has been such a treat. I mean, I know we're getting into 16 next, and I've already had some of it, but now we're tasting it and discussing it, which, you know, obviously this is, by the way, the best possible way of creating a relationship with wine is through its maker. Mm. Your notes to me are infinitely more important than any critic, however important, because you've nurtured this from infancy and you have, you know, a vision in your mind of what you crafted, what you wanted it to be, and sometimes it surprises you.
Right.
It's certainly a symbiotic relationship. It's not static.
Right. Yeah.
So you get to also, you know, not just express your intent, but receive that feedback from the wine.
So the fun, and thank you for sharing that. And I do agree that it's, and I try not to go into too many of the flavor components, but more describe the essence of the wine, the style, the approach on the palate, rather than dividing out each individual component that I might get in my wines.
Yeah.
And the components evolve. So you might get those components in one tasting, but the next time you taste it, they're different components that you're getting. What complexity in wine is all about? That the components are many. And so therefore I try to describe the intensity, the acidity, the palate exposure, the palate feeling.
Love it. Can you say that again? That's why I named the company.
Right, the palate exposure.
No, I absolutely love it.
It's just great. So, 2016, again, a very interesting vintage. We had in 15 the coldest May that we had ever had on record in Sonoma County.
Mm.
So the reason the yields were low in May was partly because of the cold weather. But the clusters that were to become our fruit in 2016 were developed during bloom of 2015. So what that meant was we were going to have fewer and smaller clusters in 2016. So I knew when I was farming in 15, my crop load was going to be very light in 2016.
Yeah.
But we had 30 inches of rain in 2016. California was still in a drought on the Sonoma Coast. I had 30 inches of rain at this vineyard. My soils were recharged. Everything was happy. Vines were happy, but I had low yields. Stopped raining very early in the season, which is good for not sizing up berries. So we had these teeny tiny little clusters. The wine is incredibly intense, but it was a cool vintage. So we have really good acidity again. A little, maybe the savory notes are mixed with a little more fruit than the 15 vintage. But really 16 was just a phenomenal vintage overall. You had this incredible balance because stopped raining early, healthier soils because we got a little more rain during the winter. Nature kind of set a very small, we were about 30% light on crop, 30% under the 14 vintage. So really interesting vintage. I find the wine's very dense, very
big,
concentrated,
yes,
and intense,
yeah.
But bright and, you know, lively at the same time. And I see the same in the Pinot Noir from that vintage. So,
you know, you said something that's really important. I just didn't want to accidentally gloss over it because complexity is one of those terms that I think has many interpretations and can be confusing. And the way that you described it was essentially almost chameleonic nature. When every time that you are in its presence, it somehow shows you a different facet. And that's what complexity means to you.
Right.
Is that it's ever changing. It's not even evolving because it's just different.
Right.
But it's this dynamic environment that gets created. And complexity is complex, but it's also simple in the sense that you relate to it on that level, that you understand in that moment what it's showing you. Mm-hmm. And that simplicity, I think, is what's so attractive. So it's not as scary, like you have to get a degree.
Right.
It's not about understanding it intellectually and grasping it. It's about letting it show you those layers and those iterations.
It brings me back to that glass of Romani Conti that I had at John Ash, where it just kept unfolding new layers.
Yeah.
And to me, that's complexity, when it continues to surprise you. Every time you come back to the glass, you see something new and something different in what the wine is expressing. That's complexity. It's not like every time you go back to the glass, you say, oh, there's lemon and there's, you know, honey, or there's your, every time you go back, you're seeing something different, or you're confused. What is that new aroma that has, I didn't notice before, or as it's gotten more air, has opened up and expressed itself. And that's the fun journey of wine. I want that last sip when the bottle is empty and you're taking that last sip, you go, wow, that was the best sip. I wish there was more in the bottle. That's what I want in every bottle of wine, that you're fascinated the whole journey through the bottle. And so although I recommend decanting, I also tell people, look, if you're gonna enjoy a bottle over 3 hours, that's decanting enough. See it as this rosebud that is, you can tell what color the blossom is going to be through the green that's holding it so tightly. But then over the evening, it's like watching a rose bloom as you're drinking this bottle of wine. That is a journey in of itself. And a great bottle of wine can be like that, where that last sip, you say, wow, it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And then you want another bottle. You want more. There's this journey calling you back to that experience. So
so if we completely for a moment edited the word wine out of this, you know, you just described the perfect relationship. Yes. It was so human, you know, meaning that you could be describing a person. Mm. What do you want out of a relationship? You want that evolution. It always starts out a little awkward. If it doesn't, I think there's something wrong with you.
Right, right.
If you're that confident that, you know, it's just like painting by numbers. No, it's that learning experience. And the more you get to know, if you like what you know, you want to know more. You're thirsty for more. And you want to see and experience those facets. And the more you experience, the more addictive it becomes. Yeah. And then you can't live without this person.
Right,
anymore.
Right.
And you want you, more.
And if you're not questioning, what is that is intriguing me? What are their interests? What are they showing me that I didn't know that I liked? You know, all of those questions that you have. And wine brings a lot of questions to me. It's brought more questions to my life than I have answers, and that's why I love it, because I am continually learning. And the same with my wife. Why do I love my wife? I love my wife because I have questions about who she's continuing to become during her life, and who she was, how her childhood and her youth shaped her, just like my growing up on a ranch shaped me. And so you're absolutely right that it is like a great relationship, that you're questioning, you're interested, you're intrigued, you're fascinated by what it's showing you and sharing with you. And so it's ever evolving. And just like a great relationship, it's ever evolving. And if it gets stale, guess what? Then you kind of pour it down the drain, right?
So that's right.
Let's hope that wine doesn't get stale as it ages.
It just keeps getting intriguing. No chance. This is, first of all,
that analogy. That's,
thank you.
That was wonderful. That was really fun. So.
This clearly is a love story. I'm so impressed. They're again, couldn't be more different, but so extraordinary in their own right. We had some rosé you very kindly poured as someone we were walking in the vineyard. And I just want to highlight, I'm a very tough customer when it comes to rosé, and I, again, complain about the acidity and structure, and I want to highlight that this has all the acidity I could possibly want. It had that backbone. It had a lot of fruit. It was one of the best rosés I've ever had.
Well, thank you. Oh, that's it's a fun wine to make. I think I put more effort into making rosé than a lot of people, but intentional. Yes, I harvest the fruit intentionally for the rosé. I do a little bit of skin contact with some of the fruit. I destem it, and then, believe it or not, I barrel ferment it, which I didn't think I would. I started in stainless and had a little too much fruit one year and ended up barrel fermenting the remaining juice, and lo and behold, the best wine was what was in a 13-year-old barrel. So the next year I did 50% of the wine in 10-year-old or older oak, and that was far better than what I did in stainless. So now I'm 100% barrel fermented on my rosé, and it makes a wine with a little more structure, almost a need to hold it back for longer. There's this kind of push to get rosé out young, and some of them are more enjoyable to drink very early, but then some of them are more enjoyable to drink with a little bit of age. It's like a great bottle of champagne. You know, it's almost always when it has a little age that it shares a little more character with you. So kind of a fun wine to make, and it's really made from wine grapes that didn't belong in my Pinot Noir. So I have a redwood grove here at the TBH vineyard, and those trees cast a shadow over part of the Pinot Noir vineyard, and that's where the rosé fruit is coming from, where where there's less sunlight on the grapes, not enough sunlight on the grapes, but it makes great rosé. So it's still great fruit. Most people would just pick it and add it to their, you know, standard Pinot Noir. But for me, I saw it blooming later. I spend so much time in my vineyards, I couldn't not pay attention to this area is different. And so I had to start treating it differently. And first I made Pinot Noir out of it and sold it off as bulk wine. And then in 2012, I said, let's change and let's harvest it early and see if we can make good rosé. And I didn't make good rosé until 2015. It took me a few vintages to figure out how to really, when to pick it and all of that. But it's been fun.
You know, a lot of people drink rosé. It's a hot category. Again, marketing-wise, there's an ocean of it out there.
Right.
However, again, for my palate, there's very few worthwhile ones.
Yeah.
And what I want to point out here is that this is no different than any other wine that you make. This isn't, hey, we have a rosé in our program because, you know, we should have a rosé. It's really full on, like any other wine that you make, from start to finish. And I normally don't talk about price points, but at a bargain price of $29, I just want you guys to understand how much effort went into this rosé. And that actually, we're tasting 2017, but you were talking about holding the rosé back. I don't hear that speak very often in my world, when you actually wanted to show the best. So this is a huge value. All your wines are value proposition, but I'll let people figure it out on their own. I won't talk about others, but this rosé, I must, because for what you get in the bottle, it's QPR, new quality price ratio. This is a poster child.
Thank you. That's fun, and I'll.
Yes.
I'm not gonna touch the price because that's a whole nother podcast we can into. So we'll save that for another visit.
I'm fairly certain it has something to do with the fact that you're not necessarily in this for money, as in knowing how much effort goes into this. And
you know, my richness of life, growing, waking up on a 12.5 acre property. Looking at wild turkeys walking through my vineyards every day, and watching the sun set and sun rise from the same property, standing in the same place, I can look and watch both happen. I am so richly blessed that what money can buy can't buy the happiness I get from the life that I've created for my family and I. And yes, you know, I do aspire to pay attention to the economics of what I'm doing, but I also want to provide a wine that far over delivers in value for the price that people are paying.
Clearly.
And I, you know, that to me was one of my goals. I actually do blind tastings with my wines every year with my quote unquote competitors, my peers that are making wine in my area. And if my wines aren't in the top 3 out of 10 for the price that my competitors are in, then I have to rethink my pricing strategy. So I'm very strict with not only putting the commitment into the farming, but making sure that the wines over deliver for the price that they're at.
You and your life philosophy and wine philosophy, of course, conversely, and attention to detail. I have no doubt that anyone that reaches out for your bottle of wine will be richly rewarded, and really that over-deliver, under-promise, over-deliver, that's what I'm tasting in everything that you've offered us today, but also over the years. It's almost a bit difficult at times to taste other wines after yours because of purity. Mm. And the elegance. So I have to always make mental notes when I run into your brand at walk around tastings that it's going to set the bar. It's going to calibrate me. So I have to be careful. You've taught me that.
come to the table last.
Exactly. Yes.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.